Today on Movie Wild Eyes, we initiate our 2015 coverage of the LA Film Festival. It's time for Movie Wallace. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, Dee as well.
Movie Wallace is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. And not just in theatres, but at film festivals is something that we've been trying to do over the last year or two. This is our second film festival of the year. We covered Tribeca back in March. Was it March?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
IFLA, Indian Film Festival of LA.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
So, here we are again. This is our third anniversary covering the LA Film Festival. We're super excited to be here again. It's been running since June 10th. This is the Saturday session that we are recording on. So that's June 13th, and we started our coverage yesterday. Managed to get in a couple of films that we wanted to talk about. Yeah. Well, should we just jump into
The taco truck?
And the infamous taco truck. So fans of Movie Wallahs, listeners to previous coverage of LA Film Festival will remember that we always talk about the taco truck that sits opposite the Regal Cinemas here in downtown LA. And
we were a little frightened because when we arrived, it wasn't here. And the lot had become a parking lot.
I actually was disappointed because when we got there, they didn't have any tacos. Like, somebody needs to get fired for that.
They ran out, to their credit.
But that's how good it is, and we were there very late.
Yes.
But that's like Burger King saying, sorry, no Whoppers today. Come on, that's unacceptable.
True. Still, the burrito was pretty good.
It was not a poor substitute, I'll give you that. It was a very satisfying burrito. But when you go to a taco truck, hell, I want tacos.
Yeah, but all's well with the world. The film festival is on, the taco truck is there, and we are watching good movies.
Indeed we are. So, I guess we kicked off yesterday with a press screening of the movie Shut In.
Mm-hmm.
So, who wants to...
Okay, so this one's directed by Adam Schindler, and it's basically about an agoraphobia. Woman who finds herself trapped when this trio of criminals breaks into her home. And she can't bring herself to actually leave the house. But it's actually the intruders who should be attempting to escape this house. So, Yazdi, this is one that we all got to see. What did you think?
I think
who was the director of this one?
She mentioned
Adam Schindler.
Great.
And, cast credit should be Beth Rees-Gruff, Jack Kessie, Martin Starr, and Rory Culkin, Macaulay's little brother.
Yes.
So go ahead, sorry, yeah.
So I think the first two-thirds of the movie is just about as good of a thriller as can be. I think we are so inured to... you know, this kind of premise of intruders coming into home and poor woman who can't leave the house has to defend herself. So it plays by all those cliches, but even by that, even by those standards, this movie, again, in the first two-thirds of it, just works remarkably well. It builds this sense of dread so easily, which is very difficult to do. I think only Shyamalan was able to do it so well in his early movies, but it really builds a sense of dread.
Joe?
You know, I actually went in very cold on this one. This is one of those classic film festival situations. You know how film festivals can sometimes be like, a box of chocolates where you've lost the index, so you kind of jump you jump into the screening. You've got no idea what the film is about, and this was very much my experience. So, it was like Yasti said. I mean, I think the first half of the movie was a very slow burn, and I didn't really have a sense for what was to come. And then the movie suddenly made this huge pivot where, you know, all of the stakes and the statuses of all the characters got flipped back to front, and it turned into something else. And it was just at the point where I was giving up a little bit. I was like, where is this going? What's happening? And suddenly, boom, this movie amped up to like a whole different level. Very effective thriller, I think. This is, I think, first time directorial effort, and I mean, clearly this this team, this director knows how to put together a very effective thriller. A little too much torture porn in there for me. I had to look away and wince on many occasions, but again, I think that just speaks to how effectively this guy is able to make us experience some of the things that were happening.
I agree with everything you guys have said, and I'll only add that I think this is one of the most original psychological thrillers I've seen in a long time, that really plays with cat and mouse, who the cat is, who the mouse is, how that changes. And yeah, I've never seen a good I don't know, I want to call it abuser or abusee, I don't know, woman in this type of role since Misery. It reminded me a little bit of Misery. It wasn't as effective as Misery, I think, in that sense, because she's not as crazy. But what a really original idea. I really enjoyed this. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
It's a good little thriller, isn't it? I mean, the movie it reminded me of was this film with the very young Ellen Page and Patrick Wilson called Hard Candy, which came out several years ago, which kind of played along those same premises, where the power kind of flips back and forth between these two individuals who are caught in a death, in a race to the death. I also want to mention what you said is, again, you know, the history of horror movies has been, you know, torture and porn and, you know, pushing the envelope. But I was surprised. I looked away from the scene more than, I think, on two separate occasions, because what was shown was so realistic
and so painful.
And so, I mean, just when you think that everything that can be done in terms of violence has been done, this kind of just pushes it just a little bit over. So I like how committedly pulpy and nasty it is. It's very committed in that.
Yeah, that's a really good one. It is pretty nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that the reason that it was so effective was some very good choices in terms of the agony inflicted on the protagonist. Because, you know, I mean, I can't remember who said this, but, you know, you see heads explode and heads fall off and dismemberments, and you can't really relate to that. But, you know, you see somebody stub their toe and you're like, wow, that really hurts. And this kind of thing here, I mean, you know, there were some injuries that were just very relatable, and just
someone breaking someone else's fingers, and that's giving nothing away.
That's
it's really painful. Yeah, my very good.
You know, the only thing that I found a little jarring, and I think in the context of not knowing what this movie was going in, I didn't really know if it was a thriller, a comedy, a drama. I mean, it was, you know, the music at the beginning was entirely inappropriate. I mean, the movie, the score is actually very good, and I don't know who did the score here, but they really captured, I think, the mood of the movie very well. But at the beginning, before we got into the shenanigans, I'll just call them shenanigans, of what really the movie was about, the score was almost overpowering, and so I just had a little bit of a hard time. I wish they'd kind of dialed it back during the opening scenes and eased us into what was a very key part of the movie's atmosphere.
Yeah,
really interesting. I mean, I kind of read a little bit, kind of predicted what situation we were in. It's very interesting seeing what would happen if a victim of child abuse got to be cat and mouse as an adult.
I didn't care for the last part of the movie at all. I think there was a little bit too much over-explaining, and I don't know how to say things without giving too much away, but I think once you kind of lay out the mechanics of the plot, it ceases to be less effective for me, because you're like, oh, well, A, because of A, B behaved like this, and because of B, C happened. It is satisfying at some level, but I would have almost wished they would have left some of it open-ended, because it kind of had more power.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. But it's a good thriller.
Okay.
Yeah, I hope this one gets a release.
Yeah.
Good acting and good casting, actually, in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
very effective.
Performances all around were great. So, yeah, good job, team shut in.
Yes.
Okay, well, the next movie that I saw was Consumed, but I can't talk about that just yet because of an embargo, and I'd like to get this podcast out, but we'll talk about that in our next update. So,
then we were watching a film called Caught.
Yeah, so Caught is directed by Maggie Kelly, and it stars Emilia Rose Blair, Anna Camp from Pitch Perfect and True Blood, Sam Page as well as Stephanie Scott. And the movie is supposedly inspired by true life events about a prank that is played out by the wife of a very successful man who suspects that her husband is having an affair. So she and her sister kidnap the girl that they believe the husband is having an affair with, and lock her up just to kind of show her as a mean prank, just to scare her a little bit. And then the movie starts with that premise. That happens in the first 5 minutes, and then the entire movie is about a series of how things escalate from there, from bad to worse. So I know, Rashmi, you saw it with me. Joe, you couldn't.
So this is the ultimate A Woman Scorned movie. So don't scorn your woman if you're a man out there. Be careful, because this can go horribly, horribly wrong. So this is a comically insane movie. It was very enjoyable. Considering we watched it straight after Shut In, it was kind of more of the same in some ways. It gave you that claustrophobic feeling because it's all in one place.
Is it more of a thriller or a horror?
It's kind
or
of
a comedy.
It's kind of a comical horror.
It's not even horror.
It's not even horror.
Yeah, I think a comical thriller. But it does go pretty dark.
But it's dark.
It goes very dark.
Yeah. Okay. But I feel like, and my heart was literally in my mouth at times. It didn't have that same level of torture porn. But it got a bit gruesome at times, or the thought of what was going to happen. Overall, though, it came across more like an extended episode of Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, good point.
Kind of, murder in suburbia versus something I think that you can really latch on to and is going to be a huge movie. Anna Camp is incredible in this movie. I mean, so, I lay this at her feet. She really carries the movie, and she plays psychotic so well.
I'll let Yes to comment, but I'd like to talk about Anna Camp simply because I know her only from True Blood, but she was terrific in True Blood.
Pitch Perfect as well.
There you go. Yeah, sorry.
I thought the movie was very, very watchable. That's about the best I can say about it. I mean, it's very watchable. It's very enjoyable. It's funny how things kind of escalate, and just when you think you can clean this mess up, you'll end up making a bigger mess, and you try to clean that mess, and then the mess becomes even bigger. And so it's just about these things completely running away from these characters in spite of themselves. It almost plays comically, like how much worse can things get, and then they get that worse. So yeah, I think Desperate Housewives is a very astute observation. It does play like a extended episode of Desperate Housewives. And I said this to you right after the screening, I think for this kind of a role of somebody who is very deeply wound
and troubled
and very, very ready to explode, but all smiles and gleam from the surface, I think Anna Kemp plays this about as well as it can be done. Everything about this movie depends on this character and her motivations, and some other actor can just make the movie collapse in the first 15 minutes, but she's somehow as ridiculous as her motivations are, she makes it believable.
Is she getting typecast? I mean,
probably.
I feel like she always plays that kind of same character, and in fairness to her, she's still building a career and she's good at that. She's really got a certain screen presence that you immediately know a lot about the character just by the way that
it's a really good point
she is and the kind of roles that she's played. So is that the case here?
I think it is, and I think she'll probably end up, if she's sensible, doing the Rachel McAdams thing, which is she was kind of that sweet girl next door, and then she took on some quite edgy roles, and I hope that Anna Camp does that and gives us a little bit of a different dimension. But she's so good. I mean, yeah, I have to say this movie works because of her.
Yeah, I love the work she does. I wish her good luck. Okay.
So then you went to watch Joe Consumed?
I saw Consumed while you were watching that one.
That's
again.
Right.
Unfortunately, we are under embargo, which is rather frustrating.
Yeah.
So I can't really... I was instructed to not talk about that, and I will follow the rules. But I did, in the evening, go to see... my first movie of the evening was a movie called A Beautiful Now. That was a directorial debut. It's a film that this director, we learned from the Q&A, had been working on for about 9 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. It was very close and personal, intimate work. She had gone through certain life experiences, and she was really writing autobiographically, although when I say autobiographically, it was experiences that she'd had in her life rather than characters that that were there in the movie. The press notes simply say it was a dancer hangs on the razor's edge between the reality and fantasy as her loved ones question the decisions and desires that have shaped their lives, who they are and who they will become. And just briefly, I mean, this was an incredibly beautifully shot movie. The DP was there. He had done some terrific work. They shot the movie in 18 days with no budget. And it's one of the most visually engaging movies that I've seen for a long time. It had this amazing kind of faded out, foggy look. Everything was backlit, so you had lots of kind of lens flare and, you know, a kind of a dreamy look to it.
I can kind of see that on the movie poster if you go on to
LA Film Fest.
You can actually see the poster, and yeah, you can see that it's all very moody looking.
This movie, yeah, this movie, I mean, it, more than anything, it captures a feeling. It's just such a close, kind of achingly beautiful, intimate portrait of somebody's life as it kind of flashes before their eyes. The movie's done in a completely non-linear way, so it's kind of hard to piece together what's going on until the end, where it kind of all comes together. And I think that was one of the frustrating aspects of watching it during the first third, was really trying to understand what was going on. But it was visually engaging. It touched on many, many big themes, you know, of 30-something, such as, you know, going into life, you know, partners, relationships, you know, what am I about, getting older. You know, there's mental illness is kind of touched upon in some places as well. You know, the curse of beauty is one of the key things that
has to deal with.
But it's a very complex and personal piece, and I think as a movie, it's not for everyone. But I think if you take the time to kind of let it penetrate your mind, it really worked brilliantly well, and the cast here was spectacular. A little overcooked in places, I think. There were so many, that this was a long movie. It ran for 98 minutes, so it's a bit longer than some of the things that we've otherwise seen here at the film festival. But what a lot of talent here on display, and you know, just a remarkable piece of work.
Okay, and that segues very nicely into the next movie we saw, which was It's Already Tomorrow in Hong Kong. This is directed by Emily Ting, and it stars Brian Greenberg, who we've seen in films like Bride Wars, and he's done a lot of TV like One Tree Hill, and Jamie Chung, who Yazdi reminded me was in The Bling Ring. So this is basically, the description is, an attraction forms between a vacationing Asian-American Angelino, toy designer, and an American expat as they meander through the nighttime streets of Hong Kong. So this has Yazdi written all over it. Yazdi, why don't you start?
Yeah, this is my kind of film. I mean, there's three things which really elevate this movie for me, and I think this is an elevated movie. It's my favorite movie I've seen so far, but we've only seen four. Number one, that it's really shamelessly romantic. It's very upfront about it, that all it is about two people talking. And in a way, I consider it to be... It worked for me so much as a movie lover, is because the film is drunk on its love for, like, Before Sunrise. You know, I think this director...
I was going to say, it sounds very Linklater-esque.
Yes. So, the director, this is her first time film as well, and, you know, a lot of it is autobiographical. But I just like that she has no other aspirations than to talk about how two people connect. And I think it's able to convey very effortlessly the sense of how sometimes two people are so right for each other, but the universe around them conspires, and I don't want to give too much away from it, but it's only chance encounters. That's all the movie's about. And every time the chance encounter ends with things around them kind of conspiring to just make it very obvious that they should not be together. And it doesn't play out very contrived, at least it did not. It just seemed very authentic. And then the last piece about the movie, which is great, is it's a love letter to Hong Kong. The whole movie is shot 100% on location in front of like 1,000 people at all times. And it has these excruciatingly long shots. I mean, these shots are like a good 5-10 minutes where they're just talking and talking and talking. Works for me like a charm. Just good stuff.
And Rashmi?
I like this, but I didn't love it as much as Yazdi. I think that this is a really admirable entry for this director. having been to Hong Kong, Joe, I mean, it was meandering through all those lovely streets and those mid-level escalators, and I saw the bar where we had a cold beer on a really, really humid day. It's lovely. It captures Hong Kong beautifully. And the director who was at the Q&A basically said that they made a big deal about taking these all in one shot, and they kept doing it until they got right. I think it's too Linklater-esque. If we hadn't seen the Before series, it pays homage to those films. But to me, Yazdi, it did come across a little bit more contrived. Well, I think what I couldn't buy was the two chance meetings. But other than that, you know what? It's sweet, and it is lovely, and it's cute, and it is the ultimate meeting the right person in the wrong place or the wrong time.
So, I mean, there's being inspired by Linklater, and there's copying. I mean, Rashmi, you sound like it copies a little more than is inspired by, or is that an unfair comment?
I don't know if it's an unfair comment, because we can't now say that every movie that we'll do this is kind of copying Linklater, because he did it so well. I mean, I don't think it's copying. I think it is inspired, but it's over flattery, I think.
See, I think when did Before Sunrise come out? Like 15 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And how come there hasn't been another movie like it? I think this is very difficult to do.
Yes,
To just go out and say, this movie is going to have very little plot, it's going to be about these two people connecting, you have to have a kick-ass script, because if you're not interested in what these people have to say to each other after 10 minutes, it's going to be a long, boring,
yes, correct.
You
great
know,
point.
Exhausting ride. So this movie has a lot of very good quiet observations, things which me as an immigrant living in the US, I could really empathize with, and I'm not in a romantic relationship with somebody from another country, but it's observations about, you know, people living in other countries, people, you know, it plays very, very nicely with the irony that she's a Chinese person in Hong Kong, but she cannot speak any Chinese, whereas he is an American guy who is an expatriate in Hong Kong, but he's more adjusted to the culture. So there's that irony, and both of them have other attachments, and this kind of stuff is very difficult to do, I think. Otherwise, it'll come off looking like a really bad episode of, you know, something on Lifetime.
Yeah, or CW.
But it doesn't. And those two actors there again, because everything rests on their shoulders, literally. I mean, they're walking for 10, 15 minutes based on a script, and so really good.
I mean, the one thing that people will have some allergy to or love for is the end.
Oh.
And the end is like literally an abrupt end where you get to decide what happens. And I put down in my notes, so I didn't talk to you about this yesterday, Yazdi will say this was the best end.
It was the best
end. I knew it!
It was not just the best end. The end, and this has not happened to me in a long, long, long time, the end actually sent a shiver down my spine. Because I was like, oh! Yes! You know, it was so perfect, because I think if it had ended any other way than it did, it would have been too ordinary.
I don't know. I was like, what? A cop-out.
It sent a chill down my...
just to see the end. For me, it got better as the film went along. I'll give you that, Yazdi. I did buy into the relationship towards the end. I think the problem I had is that I didn't quite get the chemistry at the beginning. But you know what? This is a sweet film. And I'm just tempering what Yazdi's love is saying for this movie.
I think, I don't know. It really played to my inner romantic. And it's very hard, you know.
This stuff is
hard to do.
Like, as I was rolling my eyes, I didn't even want to look at you, because I was like, you're just going to have this huge smile on your face.
I did, and I also had a tear in my eye at one point.
Lovely.
All right. So, Joe, while we were watching that, or the last movie you watched was then What Lola Wants.
What does she want, Joe?
Yeah, tell us.
Interesting, you should ask that. So, What Lola Wants is it's directed by an Australian director, Rupert Glasson, who was there at the screening and gave a wonderful Q&A afterwards. In brief, I'll just read the description here in the press notes, which is, untamed runaway Lola Franklin forges her own kidnapping, falls in love with a charming and talented pickpocket, and fiercely blazes her own trail in this off-kilter, style-soaked contemporary Western. And I think the word Western might put people off
a little bit, but it put me off.
It was Western in the sense that something like Kill Bill is a Western, or Natural Born Killers is a Western, and this is essentially a road movie. It has that kind of Bonnie and Clyde feel to it. So, you know, Lola is obviously an interesting character. She's done what she's done by getting away from her family situation. She happens to be the daughter of two famous actors, so there's fame and wealth wrapped up in that, and she comes across essentially as a young woman trying to find herself in the world. She's looking for excitement, and by excitement she's looking for danger. This is an interesting movie in that it feels like a slice of Americana, but it comes with a slightly different eye to it, simply because the director is not from America, and I think he's clearly been inspired by movies like Natural Born Killer. It has a moment which could have been taken straight from the movie Killer Joe. It really kind of amps it up. It's kind of this heightened reality, you know, Coen Brothers type dialogue in places, very, very snappy kind of back and forth between the characters.
This sounds right up my street. I think this is a film I think I would have loved.
It is, just to temper that, it was more like that movie from a year or two ago, Ain't Them Body Saints.
Which I loved.
Which was, you know, an interesting piece of work. But it was also then, it's kind of the bastard stepchild of Natural Born Killers and Ain't Them Body Saints. It has...
And a bit of Killer Joe, see?
And some Killer Joe in for good measure. But it all works really, really well. And, you know, I think ultimately the reason that there's kind of a truth behind the emotionality of the characters, they have great on-screen chemistry. Lola's motivations are never quite clear, and you know there are revelations towards the end of the movie which make things you know kind of more interesting. There's a wonderful moment with a character called Mama. That's all I'm going to say. She is one of the most fun inventions I've seen on screen in a long time. It's what she does and how she behaves and her just everything about her. She only has a small part, but she kind of almost stole the movie.
Wow!
So it was a good fun, you know, experience. Again, I don't know that this movie has full commercial potential and appeal, but I mean, if you get the chance to see it, it'll definitely make it to something like Netflix, and it's worth your while. It really is.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm kind of looking forward to that one.
Yeah, me too.
So the final movie of this podcast then is the last one that Yazdi and I saw, which is Puerto Ricans Live in Paris.
Yes, so Puerto Ricans in Paris is directed by Ian Edelman, and I believe this is his debut feature as well. It stars Alice Taglioni, Edgar Garcia, Frederick Anscombe, Luis Guzman, Miriam Shore, Rosario Dawson, and Rosie Perez. So some big name actors,
cast.
Perez, Rosario Dawson, and Luis Guzman, who's been in tons and tons of movies. And the movie's essentially kind of a comedy caper. It's based on this fashion house in Paris, which is makes one of the most coveted handbags in all of Paris. And a few days before their latest handbag is going to be released, the prototype is stolen, and so they reach out. They reach out to these two Puerto Rican policemen who happen to be brothers-in-law. Who are in New York, and they work as undercover cops going after people who make
On Canal Street
who make fake handbags. And so they get recruited, and these Puerto Ricans are flown into Paris to try and solve this murder as to who has stolen this handbag before, you know, millions of dollars are lost.
Sounds like a caper to me.
It's completely a caper. But what did you think, Rashmi?
I love this movie. This is like a movie made for me. It's so sweet and it's so sincere. And as I was watching it, you said the word, it's a caper. As I was watching it, I was thinking, you know what? They could have probably hired Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum, and it could have been like a, you know, 27 Jump Street type script. But I'm really happy that they cast these people. It was just a lovely movie to watch, and it's really, really funny, and it's very high end. I mean, considering we're at an indie film festival, it's very polished in its...
good production value.
Very good production. I love the fact that it was in Paris. It was lovely to see Paris again. I just loved it. It was a very, very sweet, silly, fun movie, and really good acting, really good dialogue. It's really, really fun.
Yes,
yeah, I liked it. It's funny. It's really funny. And I think the best thing I can say about the movie is that it has the potential, if it catches on, and I really hope it does.
That's the issue.
That it could be, you know, Puerto Ricans in Hawaii, and it could be Puerto Ricans in
Antarctica.
London, and Puerto Ricans in, you know...
Guatemala.
Yeah, I mean, it's really funny. I mean, it plays a little too broad, initially at least, for my liking. But then I think the piece, which is set in Paris, mostly where they have to go through these four or five suspects and find out who it might be, I think actually that piece is remarkably well written.
Yeah.
And it kind of, you know, you think you're smart and you have it figured out. And I thought I had it figured out and I completely played into it. Because
I'm the same. I couldn't figure it out.
Well, I thought, I knew from the start, it was, oh, it's this person all along.
That's what I thought.
And then one of the characters does eventually conclude it's that person, but then it turns out not to be, of course, that person. So anyway, it's
good sleight of hand.
Very good.
Very good sleight of hand. It's funny. It's silly. It really is not wanting to say anything much about the world, but it's cute. Rosie Perez is very nice.
I was going to say, do the famous names steal the show? Because it seems like they've got smaller parts here, but I mean, are they the kind of, oh, look, it's Rosie Perez?
No, it's just lovely to see them on screen, and okay. They don't steal the show. These two guys are amazing together. They have great chemistry. And so that would be Edgar Garcia and Louis Guzman, who we've seen in tons of things. You know, this doesn't have to be called Puerto Ricans in Paris. This could be called anything. I hope that doesn't put people off because it's called Puerto Ricans in Paris.
It's a great name.
It's the title just has me intrigued from the get-go.
But it's nothing to do with being Puerto Rican. I love that. I love this. This could have been any two people with a great, you know, history who are out to do something.
So it's not necessarily about the ethnicity.
It's not much to do with the ethnicity at all.
Because that's part of the joke, right? I mean, it seems like there's a cultural incompatibility of...
And it's smarter than that.
Yeah, okay. I think it plays by that. It does play by that.
Okay. But it's smarter, it's right? That it works way harder than it needs to.
Right. It could be like, you know, New Jerseyans in Paris. You know, it could be
two Brooklynites in Paris.
So I'm going to try something here. I think maybe with these film festival podcasts, maybe we should try and pick a film of the day. What would you say was your favorite experience yesterday?
Mine is easy. It's already tomorrow in Hong Kong. Go see it,
people. And it really is already tomorrow in Hong Kong.
No, it's in the night.
Puerto Ricans in Paris.
I thought that might be the case.
And yours?
Yeah, for me, I think it's very close between A Beautiful Now and What Lola Wants, but I think I'm going to lean towards A Beautiful Now simply because it's unlike anything that I had really seen before, and it's staying with me. I mean, I'm thinking about it a lot. I forgot to mention a wonderful performance by the lead there, Abigail Spencer. She's a talent that I think will rise, so...
And how about this? Let's try the other thing. Of the ones that we've told you, which one intrigues you the most that you'd like to watch?
That's a difficult one because I think both your two selections sound excellent. I mean, I haven't seen either one, obviously, but I want to see both. I mean, I think for different reasons because they are so different.
Yeah.
You know, I like the idea of a Link to Later-esque romance, but, you know, Puerto Ricans in Paris just sounds like a riot. So put a gun to my head, I'll go with the latter just because it sounds like a less of a risk in terms of entertainment.
Yeah, and I think of your descriptions, Joe, What Lola Wants is probably top of my list. And Yezzy, I don't even have to ask probably which one's top of yours.
Yeah, I just mentioned, I mean, I just love that movie so much. I mean, you know, I think, you know, somebody...
Of Joe's descriptions, which ones would you watch?
Sorry, thank you for clarifying.
Yeah.
I think... What Lola Wants, that was on my list originally. I was going to watch it. They had a press screening in the morning, and then I just couldn't work out with the schedule. So it I like these kind of nebulous, you know, finding yourself in life, you know, almost a stream of consciousness kind of, this is my life, these are the people surrounding me. Maybe that's not what it is, but...
Well, it's... Let me just say, this will nail it, actually. I should have thought about this when I was reviewing, but... Put Juliette Lewis in the lead role and you know exactly what kind of film this is.
Yeah, good point.
That's not selling it for me, Joe.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So Beautiful Now, I think you would probably have.
I mean, it reminds me of The Spectacular Now. I hope it's as good as The Spectacular Now.
It's nothing at all like that.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right, well, let's wrap it up for today. So mail at movieworldlaws.com. Let us know if you're enjoying this film festival coverage as much as we do... covering it. We'll have at least one or two more updates from the LA Film Festival, and
I have six movies on my list today.
if you do get a chance at all, the movie, there's a festival runs in through until the 18th, so you have 5 more days to get out here and check it out. And if you're in the LA area, there is no excuse. So twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers as well. Until our next episode, which will be very soon after this one, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.